Well, welcome to Issues and Ideas. I'm Larry Rutter. I'm your host today. Originally, we planned to talk with PG&E's weatherman John Lindsay, but alas, he was called away, unable to be here. So we'll visit maybe at a later date, but not to worry. Instead of one guest today, we have three, all here to celebrate Bike Month. The month of May is Bicycle Month. Among month-long governments, organizations here on the Central Coast, in California, and nationally have been trying to draw attention to the two-wheeled human-powered vehicle. And the hope is that to encourage people to use the bicycle for routine transportation, commuting to work, and healthy recreation. You know, over the last 10 years, the evidence of the growth of the use of the bicycle has been very healthy. Nationally, the numbers of bicycle commuters has increased by about a third. In the most bike-friendly communities, the larger bike-friendly communities, the increase has been more than two-thirds. In total, about 1% of all commuters now use a bicycle. But as bicycles are much more evident on city streets, suburban roads, and rural byways, there are a lot of issues. Bicyclists are demanding safer roadways, dedicated bike lanes, bike paths, and pleading that the unprotected bicyclist faces continual danger riding in and among vehicles weighing many tons. Motorists, on the other hand, are frequently annoyed by bicyclists riding unsafely, taking up lanes and slowing traffic, not obeying traffic laws, and generally making themselves annoying. Our three guests on Issues and Ideas are avid cyclists and deeply and long involved in promoting safe cycling. First of all, Dan Rovar is the executive director of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Coalition. Bruce Collier is the past president and life member of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club. And Dale Sutliff is a former advocate of the Slow Bike Club. And Messrs. Collier and Sutliff are also members of the Slow County Bicycle Advisory Committee. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. All right, I want to start out in an area that you probably didn't expect to talk about. But all of you have been bicycling for a long time, some longer than others. You've had a long career as a bicyclist. Think about the most memorable moment, the most memorable episode, and I mean positive memorable episode, that you have ever had on a bicycle. The thing that kind of epitomizes the whatever joy you get out of it, whatever exhilaration you get out of it. Dan Rovar, what is your – can you think of the event in bicycling that
– I can, actually. I had ridden my bike around town as a kid and used my bike a little bit for transportation, but it wasn't until when I was in college that I started riding my bike for recreation and for health. And I was lucky to have a family that was participating in the AIDS Life Cycle, which is a fundraising ride for AIDS research that goes all the way from San Francisco down to Los Angeles. And while training for the AIDS ride, I prepared myself and I became much more fit than I ever thought possible. And participating in the AIDS ride with my father, who was 68 at the time, and my sister, who was in her late 20s at the time, was really one of the most memorable experiences I ever had on a bike. Because I felt such a great community on the AIDS ride, and it inspired me to see how bikes can bring people together for positive change around a great cause.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. I might also mention, before we go on to our other two guests, they can think a little bit more about their most memorable moment. If you've got a question about bicycling on the Central Coast, or a concern, or a suggestion, or an idea, you can call in and share it with us. We'd be glad to hear from you. Our number is a special one, so you'll want to remember this. It's 781-3875. The number once again, 781-3875. Okay, Bruce Collier, past president of the Slow Bike Club, what was your most memorable moment on a bicycle?
Oh, I think without a doubt, it was after I had retired, bought myself a nice Cannondale and started riding regularly with a group called the Long Beach Sprockets, a group that no longer exists. But there was at least a half a dozen of us or so that would ride regularly around in the Long Beach area. And somebody said, well, gosh, why don't you try doing the Century this weekend? Actually, it was a couple weekends afterward, but I went out and did it, and I completed my first and only century ride.
And for the uninitiated, a century ride is?
100-mile ride, and I got done with that, and I said, well, okay, I've done that. I'm not sure I want to do that again. It took a lot longer than I expected it to do, but I did finish it, and I think that was my memorable moment.
Dale Sutliff, what was your most memorable moment on a bicycle?
Well, I'm going to cheat here and mention two. One on the commuter side. When I was first out of college and had a wife and two young children, and we had one vehicle and both of us needed to go places, and the bus service at that time wasn't that great, and I lived about 4 miles from work, and I said, I'm going to go buy a bike. And I did, and I rode the bike, and at that point, I said, this is not too bad, and then I commuted to work off and on the rest of my working life. And then the second one was, like Bruce, my first, on a recreational side, completion of my first bicycle century ride, which is always a highlight for anybody who does that. I attempted two previously without succeeding. So the third time was, in fact, a charm for me.
All right. Well, because many of the things about a lot of the people that ride bicyclists is a long life of bicycle riding with lots of events in them. And there is a lot of bike riding that takes place in San Luis Obispo. And one of the things that I noticed is that both Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo, by the American League of Bicyclists, the national organization, have been dubbed as bicycle friendly. But actually, it's only at the third level. I forget. There's platinum, gold, and then silver, and then there's a couple. By the way, what makes a city bike friendly, and why isn't San Luis Obispo platinum? Dan Rivar?
Well, there's a set of criteria that the League of American Bicyclists uses to evaluate communities for bike friendliness. And the criteria is called the 5 E's, and it's a bit of a test to see if I can recall them all right now. But I believe they are engineering, enforcement, encouragement, and Dale, can you help me? Education.
Well, that would be another one.
And there's one more. So what they do is they look at a community and determine whether or not the community has bike facilities, separated bike lanes, bike paths. Any sort of innovative transportation facilities like a bike signal head at an intersection. They look at the police department and determine whether or not the police are enforcing the laws for cyclists. They look at the education programs in the community, whether or not there are any organizations that are providing bike education to community members that are trying to learn how to ride smart. And then they look at the city planners and whether or not the planners are taking into account the needs for cyclists as they design new streets and build their circulation element and do that sort of thing. And so if all of those elements come together in a healthy way and there's an indication that the community is, in fact, placing priority on promoting biking and walking and making transportation choices available to community members, then they are likely to go ahead and designate the community as a bike-friendly community. Mm-hmm. And while San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara are both on the map for bike-friendly communities, we're very excited to have Paso Robles submitting an application this year, and we're hoping that Paso will also be added to the list as another bike-friendly community in our area in the Central Coast of California.
Where does the city of San Luis Obispo fall short in terms of being a bike-friendly community?
Well, I'll take a shot at it. I won't have all of the facts, but I think all of our cities, I think fall short probably isn't the handle I would put on it. I think in the last 20 years, there's been tremendous progress in the county and the cities in the county. And so I think the good news is that they all continue to work and strive for that. Where they come up short oftentimes is in the infrastructure that let's put it this way, was designed originally for the automobile only, and less so for pedestrians and bicyclists and things like that. So the cities over the last 15, 20 years have been doing a good job in trying to change their infrastructure. And so they're coming up short in the sense that it's been challenging to meet some of those criteria that Dan mentioned. But I think they keep working on it. It's at the end of the day, it's all about money.
Well, is it all about money? I wonder. I mean, does the city administration, does the city political leadership, their attitudes toward bicyclists have a lot to do with it? And how does the city of San Luis Obispo shape up in that way?
Well, the attitude is absolutely essential. And the decision makers, you know, really need to be in the camp of multimodal transportation, because it really serves everybody better, even the driver. And many, many studies point to that as a reality. And if you look at even what the big cities are doing, like New York and San Francisco, and Bruce mentioned Long Beach, I mean, they're really out there. And they're really pushing the changes on the standards by both the state and the federal agencies, that because they have the criteria has to fit within those parameters. They're changing their standards because the cities are ahead of them. Yeah. So I think that's a good thing.
We're talking about bicycles and bicycling, and you might have a question or a comment or a suggestion or a complaint. If you do, we would invite you to give us a call. We have a special phone number that we're using today. It's 781-3875, 781-3875. So if you would like to chime in the conversation and talk a little bit about bicycling, your own experience with it, your own attitudes, maybe you're not a bicyclist, maybe you're a driver and have some thoughts about the two-wheeled vehicles that you see on our city streets. If you do, 781-3875 is the number to call, 781-3875. Bruce, so you've been around here for 20 years, Bruce Collier. Has the city of San Luis Obispo, just to pick on them because they're the closest at hand, been a major improvement in their treatment of cyclists?
Oh, I certainly think so. We can just show examples of actions they've taken and things that have been done. The first thing they completed was two major sections of the railroad safety trail. They've worked on trying to figure out and put in segments that will eventually end up as part of the completed Bob Jones Trail from the city to the sea. But I think one of the more important things that most all the cities now are starting to look at is a program that I know Dan and the coalition have really gotten behind, is connecting our cities, because we've got a lot of places where you can't get from one city to the other. They both got areas where the bike lanes or bike paths are come up to a city limit, and then suddenly you encounter a stretch of inaccessibility for cyclists to get between one city limit and through some county area or something of the sort and on to the next one. Critical one, in my estimation, and something that looks to be making major progress now, is being able to connect in North County from Templeton to Atascadero. Mm-hmm. Once that gets done, I think that'll be a major route to provide access to a lot of people working in the North County.
If I could comment on that just briefly, I sit on the County Bicycle Advisory Committee, and in the past year we've updated the County Bicycle Plan. And as a result of testimony a lot of us gave to the grand jury a few years ago, one of the principal objectives was to complete the connections that Bruce is talking about. And when you look at the bicycle plans, both in the county and a lot of cities, that is one of the most important standards they're trying to achieve. The piece he mentioned, the Templeton-Atascadero connector, is very high in the county's plan. It's currently being planned as a part of the De Anza Trail, which is a federally supported trail in the North County. But that's just one of many. At the county level, the single most important missing link literally are the missing links, the connections that connect one safe route to another safe route. Mm-hmm. And those are the obstacles that Bruce were just talking about that everybody's working on, but it's very challenging.
Yeah. The number to call if you have a comment or a question, 781-3875. This is Issues and Ideas. My name is Larry Rutter, and we have as our guests Dan Wavar and Bruce Collier and Dale Sutliff, representing both the Bicycle Coalition, San Luis Obispo, as well as the Slow Bicycle Club. Have on the line Eric. Eric, you are on the air. Let's see. Eric, are you with us here? Try once again. 781-3875. 781-3875 is the number to call. Let me try again.
Nothing.
Eric, you with us?
Not hearing anything.
No. No, Eric. Well, Hank will work this out, and we'll figure out what we're going to do.
I can hear you.
Now, Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
No, I don't hear your voice, Eric. I'm sorry. We'll work this out. Again, I guess we're talking about moving up a notch in terms of the city, but in terms of the county, in terms of the entire area of the city, I think there's a general consensus around here that it's the connectors, things that connect each one of the jurisdictions that's one of the big problems. And Templeton Atascadero is one of them. Certainly the San Luis Obispo with Avila in that area. There's what are the other ones, the other big connector issues?
Well, for years, very high priority has been Price Canyon and the connection down to the Five Cities. And hopefully that'll get done someday. Currently they're rebuilding the bridges on Price Canyon to widen them to accommodate bicycles. Mm-hmm. And so somewhere down in the future, we'll have that connection completed. There's also the many, many connections, but some are little, some are small. And some are internal to the city, some are to the county. And, you know, there's a whole laundry list of those in every plan. But those are some of the major ones. You know, Morro Bay to San Luis without riding on Highway 1, for example, particularly to Cuesta College. And these guys can probably think of some other ones.
Yeah, we really envision a system that connects all aspects of San Luis Obispo County from San Miguel all the way to Santa Margarita, on down to San Luis Obispo over the grade, from San Luis Obispo to Pismo Beach. That whole segment is all part of the De Anza Trail. Mm-hmm. We envision connections from Cambria down to Cayucos and down from Cayucos to Morro Bay and from Morro Bay to San Luis Obispo. And again, we're talking here about, in the most part, about separated facilities like the Bob Jones Trail. We've seen the Bob Jones Trail really become a great success for our county in attracting visitors and providing safe, active space for people who might not consider themselves a cyclist, but do ride bikes all the time. And what we're really excited about is building more bike paths for people ages 8 to 80 so that everyone has healthy, safe access to shop, play, and commute by bike.
All right. Let's try once again for Eric. Eric, are you there?
Yes.
Whoa, yes, you are there. All right. Sorry for the confusion, but what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, my name is Eric Meyer, and I've been working on some opportunities that came up out in Edna Valley for the De Anza Trail. And these are old narrow gauge railway parcels from the Pacific Coast Railroad that came up for sale randomly about a month and a half ago. And one was a foreclosure, and it was cheap, and so I bought it. and then I put the next one on, the one next door, into escrow as well, with the intent to try to convince the county that these little skinny but very long routes exactly underneath the De Anza alignment and take us from the middle of the Edna Valley all the way down into the oil company in Price Canyon. So there's a great opportunity there.
Wow, that's terrific. And give me a better verbal picture of exactly where this is.
Well, the parcels that are in escrow now are on the west side of the UP Railroad, adjacent to the UP Railroad, the Union Pacific, but on the west side, between Corral de Piedra Road, which is also parallel with the UP. They're 60 feet wide, and it's just about 2 miles long. And so the top end, the north part of it is just almost to the Country Club neighborhood, just with the golf course out there south of San Luis Obispo, south of the airport. And then the southern end of the parcels that we're working on are down in Price Canyon at the eastern end of Price Canyon within Plains Exploration Oil. This little skinny 60-foot wide parcel goes down into PXP Oil almost a mile. And the opportunities are that the PXP Oil Company is actually going through very big expansion plans right now. And so those plans involve quite a number of rather radical things that they're doing. And so there's going to be some various and sundry mitigations that they're required to do, which mean that we might be able to extract some bike path segment out of them as a mitigation for whatever environmental situations they're setting up. And so I think that we have opportunities to get through PXP Oil. And the same goes to the parcels south of there. There's, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the exact housing developments and so forth that are being proposed south of PXP Oil, but those housing developments may or may not happen over the next few years. And if so, they'll be required to install bike paths through their segments as well. And indeed, they've already granted the easements in many cases for those bike paths. So they're just the timing. The reason I bought these parcels is because I believe that really there's only a few owners between San Luis Obispo and Pismo Beach. There's the Union Pacific Railroad. There's these two private development companies. There's the PXP Oil, Plains Exploration Oil, it's called. There's the parcels I have in escrow. And then there's two other parcels north of mine, or two other parties, several parcels, but only a couple of owners. And that gets you all the way up to Country Club neighborhood. In the Country Club neighborhood, there's existing old Class 1 bike path already on the ground. You know, it's very likely that this could come together much easier than it might seem.
Oh, very, very interesting. And this is the first time I've ever heard the phrase De Anza Trail. What's the background of that?
Juan Bautista de Anza is the Spanish explorer that came through the neighborhood from Mexico, Arizona, up through California, through all the different missions. And the first was just an exploratory mission in 1772, I believe. And then the second one was more of a populating mission where he brought a crew of 1,000 or so people and then dropped off a few people here and there along the way with the intent to settle and begin the Spanish, basically, ownership of California. So Juan Bautista de Anza is just well known, and he walked this exact route in his tour, and his notes are actually online. If you dig around for Juan Bautista de Anza, you can find the actual notes that the various scribes along those tours wrote down, and they describe walking up through Price Canyon, and they describe walking into San Luis Obispo, and it's pretty interesting to actually read them. They've been translated to English, so it's pretty simple.
So the De Anza Trail would, in effect, connect Pismo and San Luis Obispo when it was all assembled.
You know, actually, it connects Mexico up to San Francisco, ultimately.
All right.
One big long trail. We're just one segment of the longer trail. I mean, it's a national park trail, a National Park Service level trail, although the Park Service has no funds, and so basically it's up to the individual counties and cities to try to assemble the pieces over time to put it all together into one big thing. Yeah.
Eric, thank you very much. That's been very interesting. We'll watch with great interest how successful you are in putting these pieces together.
Yeah, well, it's already passed the Parks Commission at this point. It's passed the Bicycle Advisory Committee and the Trails Advisory Committee, and so we're waiting until sometime in June, I think, to go through the Board of Supervisors and see what they feel about it.
All right, terrific. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
If you have a comment or a question or like to chime in on our discussion of bicycles and bicycling, again, the phone number is 781-3875. We have three people with me in the studio. Dan Rovar, who's Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition, Dale Sutliff and Bruce Collier representing the Slow Bicycle Club. Bruce, a past president, Dale, a past advocate for the club, both of them on the county advisory committee. And we're talking about bicycles and bicycling and all the things that are involved there. 781-3875. Let's talk with Shane. Shane, you are on the air. Shane.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. What's on your mind, Shane?
Yeah. I just chimed in here. I just caught your show here on my way home from work, and it was nice to hear a discussion about bicycle routes. I just had a quick question, maybe one of the panel could answer. I live in Paso, and they spent about a year redoing a section of the road from 13th Street Bridge south along the river to the back of Albertsons there and Walmart area of Niblick. But the bike path stops there at the bottom and then reappears on the other end by 13th Street. I'm just curious, is there any plan to finish that bike path so that you can get from 13th Street Bridge over to the Walmart Shopping Center area?
Dan Rivar.
Yes, there is. I'm glad you asked. This is part of the Salinas River Corridor segment of the De Anza Trail in North County. And the various jurisdictions throughout North County, City of Atascadero, City of Paso Robles, and County of San Luis Obispo have recently received a planning grant to go ahead and finish the studies necessary to take the next steps to complete that path. And so we're very excited about completing those projects and bringing together the whole segment in order to provide great connections in Paso and get a great bike route through the river corridor to provide lots of safe space for families and young people to ride in Paso as well.
Hmm. Very interesting. Did that answer your question, Shane? Anything else?
Yeah, no, that was it. I was just curious because there was already a nice bike path on each side of that, and they redid that road, and then it was kind of curious of why there was no bike path. So that answered it.
Yeah, those types of gaps are exactly the frustrations that we have.
Missing link.
Yeah, the little missing link in there is something that can be of great frustration, but you bet that the community is definitely paying attention to it and looking to get that closed as soon as possible, as funds are available, and as the planning process gets through its rigmarole as well.
All right, Shane, well, thank you very much for the call. The number to call for you, if you've got a question or comment, are 781-3875. This is Issues and Ideas. My name is Larry Rutter. We have three guests in the studio, Bruce Collier, Dale Sutliff, Dan Rivar, talking about bicycling. I want to remind also our listeners that tomorrow afternoon at about this time on at this spot on your radio dial, from 4 until 5 o'clock, we have a debate between the two candidates for San Luis Obispo County 3rd District Supervisor. Ed Waggy and Adam Hill, the incumbent, will be here with us in the studio, and we'll be asking them some questions, and they'll ask each other some questions, and that'll be going on tomorrow between 4 and 5. If you have a question that you would like me to ask either one or both of the candidates, I would urge you to send it to me at larry@kcbx.org. I've gotten quite a few questions, but I'd like to hear what you think are the major issues and the major concerns and what you would like to have answered. So that's tomorrow afternoon between 4 and 5 at this very spot on your radio dial. Let's go back to the phones and talk with Jack. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment is one that you probably are not going to want to hear, but here we go. I understand that what you're talking about are strictly so far as recreational use of bikes. And I used to ride a bike until, well, I'm now of an age and where I can't do it anymore. But anyway, one of the problems that I see continually with bikes as a car driver is that the bicycle riders, now these are not recreational riders. The recreational riders are generally not out early in the morning or in the evening or something like that. They're out in daylight hours when they're visible and that sort of thing. And they really follow rules pretty much you know, as the most part, and I appreciate that. But the people in town who ride the bikes for transportation, there are no lights, they do not obey traffic rules, and I think that no bicycle should be sold without adequate lighting front and back, and that it should be a citable offense. If I drive my car without lights, headlights, tail lights, whatever, I would be cited. And I think riding a bicycle without adequate lighting should also be a citable offense and should be pursued. And with as an educational program, because those people are being very selfish, making all the rest of us responsible for their safety. So that's my comment.
All right. Well, Jack, we've got a few people here who'd like to respond to you. Dan Ruwar, for instance.
Jack, I'm so glad that you bring it up. your wish is our command, and it's already been made true. It is, in fact, a citable offense to to ride a bike at night without sufficient lighting. All bikes that are sold at bike shops are required to include all of the legally required reflectors on them, with the exception of a front light. And so I think the concern that you have is very well put, especially to a forum like ours where we want cyclists to be safe and we want the system, the greater system, to make the world safer for more people to feel comfortable to ride bikes. So I really appreciate your concern, and I encourage you to go ahead and contact the police department or bring up the idea of enforcement more in the community, because one of the things that we struggle with is many cyclists don't understand that they're required to follow the rules of the road or required to use a light at night, because we often see them getting off the hook from enforcement agencies and that type of thing. We definitely want to see cyclists riding predictably and staying safe, and using lights and obeying the traffic laws is definitely part of that. So what you're saying is spot on.
Yeah, I think we all around this table, driving in the city or even in the country, have encountered unlighted, unreflected bicycle, and it just makes the hair on the back of your head. I was crossing one street, and there was absolutely no – I came to a stop, and this was in San Luis Obispo late one night, and a bicycle went in front of me, and I just – he was invisible, utterly invisible. And it's quite frightening, Jack. Bruce,
you see him with dark clothing, no light, riding the wrong way on the road. Excuse me. And unfortunately, there's never anyone there to enforce that regulation. And you can't get seem to get the message through to them that if you can't easily be seen, you are putting yourself in harm's way.
Yeah, right. All right.
Unfortunately, reflectors just aren't adequate, because they're only visible from dead front or dead rear. And you're right, if somebody comes from the side in front of you, they're actually in a blind spot, no matter where they are.
Yeah. There's actually reflectors required for the side of the bike as well. So if a bike is meeting all of the requirements, it should be very visible. But you're right, there is a challenge, and the Bicycle Coalition and the Bicycle Club and various organizations around the community are doing our best to reach out to people that are interested in riding more to make sure that they recognize some of the responsibilities that they have by being users of the road and sharing the space with other vehicles.
Yeah, Jack, if I could jump in here just for a moment, Dale Sutliff. We all agree with you. That's not, you know, so that's a non-issue. In the bike club, we go over this over and over and over about bike safety. My intuitive feeling is, having taught at the university for a number of years, just to cite a certain population, when reflective clothing and flashing lights and all the proper behavior on a bicycle becomes fashionable, maybe we can encourage a certain sect of the population to ride accordingly. As my wife and I, you know, people think, well, you're only a bicycle ride. Well, all of us, I have two cars and four bicycles. So we use them both. And when I'm in my car, I'm very concerned about bicyclists riding inappropriately and unsafely. And that's what keeps some potential bicyclists off the road, because I think something we should talk about is just one of the single things that keeps people off the road is their concern for safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's seems to me that one of the problems, you know, you guys are all touching on it, but one of the problems is that a whole lot of people just don't think it's cool to be safe or something, and maybe that's the way to go, is to all of a sudden begin to convince them that it's cool. survival is cool.
Yeah.
That's it.
Absolutely. Well, Jack, we want to thank you very much for your call. Are you satisfied with your answers?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I just wanted to air my gripe.
Well, we appreciate it very much. Very appropriate. He called us on 781-3875, and Aram is on the same line. If you have a call or a question, something you'd like to talk about, 781-3875. Aram, you're on the air. Aram, are you there? I guess not. Well, Aram? All right. We're talking about bicycles and bicycling opportunities on the Central Coast with three individuals, two of whom represent the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club, just an organization of recreational cyclists with organized rides, including two what they call organized century rides each year in the spring and in the fall. They are Bruce Collier and Dale Sutliff. Dan Rivar is the representative of the Bicycle Coalition. Franklin, you are on the air. Franklin? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, there we are.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, Franklin?
Yeah, I've about bicycles and highways and connections. I commuted a lot on Highway 1. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'm. I commute on Highway 1 quite a bit. Yeah, I commute on Highway 1.
You're on delay, Aaron, Franklin. So you can turn down your radio. I think. You'll be less concerned.
Sure.
All right. Now.
Okay. Years ago, there was a big debate going on about dedicated lanes, separate from the highway. And the ones that are they put in with the bike lane, and it seemed to me the bicycle clubs objected to the separate lanes because they were the speeders. They wanted to go along as fast as the cars, and so they they objected to it, and we voted down the separate. The county wouldn't go for separate bicycle lanes at the time. A lot more expenses, and I look at Cuesta College parking lot. And all the cars, the overflowing of cars, and yet it's so close to San Luis Obispo, yet there's no decent, safe bicycle connection to San Luis Obispo to Cuesta College, or from Morro Bay or Los Osos to San Luis Obispo.
That's absolutely the case. There's no question about it.
And so I don't know how we're going to connect those, but how do the bicycle clubs feel now about separate lanes versus just a speed lane on the side of the highway.
Bruce?
Well, I think that we, the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club, have been strongly in support of a variety of bike lanes, bike paths, separated bike routes, class one, class two, to provide the maximum availability where it's feasible. I know that a number of years back, Dale was on a committee that came up with a report for the county of providing a route all the way from San Luis Obispo to Morro Bay off the Highway 1, which would provide a commuter route in both directions. It's feasible. It's not an inexpensive thing to do, and it may not be the highest priority for most people. The critical thing is that you need to have a route that is justifiable, that's feasible, and can get built. And, of course, we have a problem coming up probably in the next 30 days in that Congress would like to, certain members anyway, would like to eliminate the funding for, as part of the transportation funding program on the federal level, which would pretty much eliminate the dollars available to states and to counties for constructing such facilities. Mm-hmm. So we need to let our legislators know that it's critical that this be improved, funded, and enhanced.
Did that answer your question, Franklin?
It does. That's wonderful. Wonderful if it happens. Some places like Los Osos seem like it's impossible to connect, but San Luis Obispo, the Cuesta, there's a railroad line that goes all the way to Camp San Luis Obispo that's unused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
the highway.
Actually, Bruce referred to that study was completed. Dan can probably give you some details on that, too. It is on a priority list for the county. Of course, it competes with everything else, but there is a lot of public right-of-way between Cuesta College and San Luis Obispo. It's a matter of putting all the pieces together and getting it underway. And I say each one of these projects we all support, but in one way they're competing with each other. So mm-hmm. that's where our decision makers have to make some tough decisions.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for your comment and question, Franklin.
Thank you very much for putting this on the air.
Thanks. Our pleasure. This is Issues and Ideas. We have three people talking about bicycling. If you'd like to chime in, our number is 781-3875. We have one line that's open. No, it's closed now. But let's go to Mike on line two. Mike, you are on the air.
Thank you. I got two questions. Well, I guess three. One, can you hear me?
That's a question for affirmative.
Okay, thank you. When you're riding your bike, so this is a law question, I guess. When there's a bike lane, obviously you ride the bike lane. And when there's not a bike lane, you ride over in the right-hand lane. What do you do when you want to make a left-hand turn and there's no bike lane provision for that? And then the second question is, years ago they talked about getting a bike path on the old Pacific Railroad right away through Napomo from Arroyo Grande up into Santa Maria. Whatever happened to that?
All right. Let's see if we can answer both of those questions, Mike, and thank you very much for your call. Let's see. Left turns.
Operating a bike on a roadway gives you or provides you with the same rights, the same rules, and the same responsibilities as driving a car. And what we teach in our workshops at the Slo County Bicycle Coalition and what is taught nationwide to cyclists through the vehicle code is that the cyclist is supposed to use the bike lane unless they need to make a left-hand turn, unless there's debris in the roadway, unless they are passing another vehicle, and there's a couple of other exceptions. And so what a cyclist should do if they want to turn left is to look over their shoulder. If it's clear, they should go ahead and signal with their left-hand arm. They should look over their shoulder again, and they should merge into the traffic lanes in order to get into the rightmost lane that serves their destination. In the case of making a left-hand turn, there may be a left-hand turn lane, or they can use their lane positioning to indicate to other drivers that they are intending to turn left. The basic idea is to be predictable and drive your bike. You drive your bike just like you would drive a car, and so using turn signals and using the turn lanes is part of that. It's easy to make a left-hand turn if you do it that way.
All right. Anybody want to add to that? Otherwise, let's go to the line and talk with Christine. Christine, you're on the air with Issues and Ideas. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Good evening, gentlemen. I'm calling to issue a thank you and an invitation.
Indication, okay.
Invitation.
All right, that we got
yes.
it. Right.
Okay, well, I'll start with the invitation. I'm calling from the 4th of July Committee for the City of Morro Bay, and we're excited about our third annual all-ages bicycle parade on the 4th of July. I know that Dan is familiar, and we'd like to thank the Bicycle Coalition for setting up the bike valet for us on that day. So when you bring your bike to Morro Bay and you ride from the Rock to Tidelands Park, you can have a safe and secure place to park your bike all day thanks to the volunteers and the staff at the Bike Coalition.
Oh, that's nice. And what time does this start in Morro Bay, and exactly where does it start?
Okay. It starts on the 4th of July. What's the 4th of July? We're celebrating this year on the actual day on Wednesday. And the bike parade kicks off at 1 p.m. And everyone can meet at the Rock beginning about noon. And then we ride down the Embarcadero in a very safe manner. We have a police escort. And then we arrive to Tidelands Park at the end of the Embarcadero, where there are all kinds of activities and a family carnival and music all day long. And that's also where you can park your bike.
Oh, great. Now, you also had a thank you.
I do. I need to thank the gentlemen from the Bicycle Club, because thanks to them, we are able, the 4th of July Committee of Morro Bay is able to pay the Bicycle Coalition for the valet. So all things are possible when people work together and collaborate, and we just really appreciate it. And it's obvious to see that when we first started the bike parade, we had about 250 people, and then last year for the second annual, we had over 500.
Wow. All right.
So, 1,000 this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, we're very excited about it.
Yeah. And Bruce just said 1,000 this year.
Well, we would love it.
All right.
We would love it.
Well, we'll
Dan
see.
I don't know if Dan could park 1,000 bikes.
We can handle anything.
We'll see you on the 4th of July, Christine.
Thank you. Great conversation.
Thank you. Bye-bye. If you've got a comment or question, there's one open line, 781-3875. Carol, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. This is something that I think needs to really be addressed. Distracted drivers. We all share the roads, truckers, cyclists, and vehicles, cars. And I think there was a young man in Santa Maria on Telephone Road in July of 2009 that was cycling on a Saturday, and he was killed by a distracted texting driver. And I think signs need to be posted. There has to be law enforcement, because we need to protect everyone who uses the road. And when you're on a cycle, you're on a on a bicycle, you're pretty much, if you're on a 20, a 15 speed, you're down low. So many times people don't see you. And I think that needs to be addressed. Gentlemen, I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Oh, thank you very much for your very, very timely comments. There actually was a fatality just a couple weeks ago in, outside of Santa Maria. A 55-year-old cyclist was on the bike lane or on the shoulder of the road, and an elderly driver just took him out and killed him. Pretty sad.
Yes, it's what I mentioned earlier about safety is that that's paramount with everything. And I remember the incident you're talking about as well, the one that Larry just mentioned. And, the three of us here can't say strongly enough about being visible. And I'll throw in one other thing, too, two other things. One is just about everybody in the bike club, of which there are nearly 600 members, uses a mirror, a rear-view mirror. Come in various forms, clip onto your helmet, onto your glasses, onto your handlebars. You can constantly be aware of what's behind you. And it just becomes a commonplace to be constantly looking in your rearview mirror, just like you do when you're driving a vehicle. And so I can't say more strongly enough that when you're out there on those roads, use a mirror. It'll help you, as well as all the other things that Dan has mentioned. And then the second thing I'll mention, since Bruce brought up legislation before, currently before the state Senate, is SB 1484 or 64. Anyway, it's called the Give Me 3 Feet Rule. And that applies to all streets and roads. And it went through the legislature last year, and Governor Brown vetoed it because he had a couple issues. Those have been corrected. And now, so far, it seems to be sailing through again. And that will, again, as a part of the vehicle code, make it a responsibility of a driver to give a bicyclist adequate space, regardless of the type of the road they're on when passing. So, anyway, we just need to keep working on that stuff.
Yeah, I very much agree. But I do take some issue with the idea that the cyclist is responsible for being constantly aware of what's going on behind them in cases where the accident is clearly the driver's fault. What happened recently in the Lompoc area is a pure tragedy. And we had a cyclist who was obeying the law, riding on the shoulder, and in this case, it wasn't even a distracted driver. Veered out of their lane and crashed into the rear end of the cyclist and killed them. And the case that you cited is also a horrible story, in which case distracted driving led directly to the death. I think this is an issue for our community at large from a grassroots standpoint, to speak to our police departments, to speak to our district attorneys, and to make sure that drivers are held responsible for their actions. It's absolutely the case that you're not allowed to drive and text. You're not allowed to use your cell phone up to your ear when you're driving, but we know that enforcement of those laws is slim to none. And I challenge our community law enforcement officers to step up to the plate and understand that they have a massive responsibility and can play a very, very powerful role in making our roads safer for all different users and all different types of vehicles. We can't let these tragedies continue to happen, and so long as drivers get off without charges for mistakes that they made, I don't think we'll ever recognize how much responsibility we have when we're behind the wheel of a vehicle.
All right. Good speech. Good speech.
That's Bruce? Certainly true. Yeah. We have too many instances of inattentive drivers or drivers who are distracted by not just texting or using their cell phones, but doing other things while they're driving and not putting full attention toward what's going on the road. It's just incredible to be stopped at a corner and see somebody coming around a corner while doing something that they're inattentive, and they run into a parked car. And I've seen it now twice at the intersection of Osos and Bouchon, and they ride up over the curb at that corner, too.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The phone number is 781-3875. Terry, you are on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, Terry.
Hi. I ride in North County, so I sort of have a North County-specific question. I ride a lot on the west and east side of Paso, but when you get to Templeton, you have to get on the freeway to connect to ride anywhere south toward Santa Margarita or through Tascadero. And I was wondering if there are any plans to connect Templeton in a bike lane to Tascadero. Because there's when you go next to the high school, it goes like almost all the way to Tascadero, and then where there's a trestle train bridge, it stops and, you know, it's only a matter of probably putting a bridge across to connect those two sections.
I think we have an answer for your question, Terry. Hold on. Dan Rivar?
Terry, we are definitely aware of the fact that that is a massive gap in our bike infrastructure in North County, and that is a top priority for the County of San Luis Obispo, both in grant applications and exploration for funding to buy the bridges and go ahead and take that project through to the finish line. So we're definitely aware of that, and as much as possible for you to contact your supervisor and ask them to put the pedal to the metal to get that project done and provide a great bike connection to commuting cyclists and high school age students who want to be able to ride their bikes to school. We think that that's a very, very important project. We value your voice, and I'd like to let you know that there's a building resource online right now that has just been launched that is coming together to provide you with information about when you can go to the next public hearing about a project like this. And that website is called connectslocounty.org. That's an initiative of the Bicycle Coalition to provide voice to people like you who would like to see these projects finished, because your voice is essential in talking to the decision makers that can or cannot place emphasis on getting these projects done. So we really value your thoughts and hope that we can make your voice heard at Board of Supervisors meetings to get that project done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, thanks. That answer your question, Terry?
Yeah, great. Thanks very much, guys. Any timeline on when that might happen? Or
The most recent grant application was 2 years ago, at which point we did not receive funding. And so the county actually applied for a different project and received funding for it, which is along Vineyard Drive in the area as well. They're making some improvements to the bike lanes there. And so the county will revisit grant applications for that project probably in the next cycle. I can't tell you with any certainty what the timeline looks like for getting that done, and I wouldn't want to mislead you, but it is sometime probably within the next 5 years.
If I might jump in there on Vineyard Drive, that's currently in the design process, and the funding is in place in the next year or two to connect the school on the west side to the high school on the east side along Vineyard Drive, and that'll be under construction in the coming year.
All right. Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you.
Carolyn, you are on the air.
Yes. I would like to comment on my problems as a pedestrian. walking along Oso Street, for example, in San Luis Obispo, and finding that there are bicycles traveling on the sidewalk on that street, going along at maybe 20 miles an hour. I'm a fast walker. I do about 4 miles an hour, but still, it is a hazard for pedestrians. There doesn't seem to be much enforcement to keep the bicycles off the sidewalks, and with the widespread use now of the level curb cut to facilitate people in wheelchairs, this is great for bicyclists. They don't have to even get off the sidewalk at a corner. They can just zoom along, and I have taken to treating the sidewalk somewhat as a street. I will not change lanes, so to speak, on a sidewalk without looking behind me to see if there's a bicycle coming along that lane. Skateboards are somewhat less of a problem because you can hear a skateboard coming. You don't hear a bicycle coming. I would like to hear the cyclists' input on this problem.
Yeah, but it's a good point you make, Carolyn. Very good point. I'm going to have to cut you off, however, we're kind of on time, and we've got quite a few people on the line. But thank you very much for calling. All right, we're going to take at least one more call. This is Stephen. You've just got a couple minutes, Stephen.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I would like to reinforce Carolyn's comment about bicyclists on the sidewalk and also on just hiking paths. When you're walking your dog and have a leash on the dog, over the last 5 years, I've wiped out at least two bicyclists who came along with, overtook me from the rear and had no warning.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to bells or oga oga, horns or
yeah.
something like that? I mean, helmets are required by law. Why isn't a signaling device required?
Very good point. Thank you very much, Stephen. I'm going to have to sort of cut that off at this point because we have run out of time, I'm afraid. We've had three guests here talking about a wide range of subjects, including many that have to do with safety as well as recreational bicycling. Dan Wavar from the Bicycle Coalition, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dale Sutliff from the Slow Bicycle Club, thank you. Bruce Collier from the Slow Bicycle Club, both of those, Dale and Bruce, also on the County Advisory Committee on Bicycles. I want to thank you also very much for being with us today here on Issues and Answers, Issues and Ideas. My name is Larry Rutter. I want to remind you that tomorrow from 4 to 5, the debate between the 3rd District candidates, Ed Waggy and Adam Hill, will be here from 4 to 5. If you've got a question you'd like me to ask them, email me at larry@kcbx.org. Otherwise, tune in tomorrow, and maybe you'll have a better idea who you're going to vote for 3rd District Supervisor. Again, my name is Larry Rutter. This is Issues Ideas on KCBX.